This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 911, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
Hit me!
There's not a minute to spare.
Don't worry.
There's not a minute to spare.
Don't worry.
Going, going, gone. Now I dialed 911 a long time ago. But don't you see how late they're reacting?
My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and this is my co-host, Josh Flanagan.
Hey there!
And welcome back to iFanboy Pick of the Week. This is episode 911. What's your emergency? It's a comics emergency, and we're here to help. Every week, one of us picks the books they like the... No, that's not how it goes. Every week, one of us picks the book they like the best from their stack of comics. We'll call that the Pick of the Week. We're going to talk about that book, other books of the week, the patron pick, listener mail if we got time. And here's your spoiler warning. There'll be some spoilers because it's a review show. Josh, you had the pick this week.
So the way this works is I had a lot of books.
Yeah, I had 25 books I read this week.
I had something like that. I had a handful of books I had to read from before. I did a very good job of not coming too far behind, but it happens that this was the week where I had which I don't hate. The problem with that is that I don't want to review both books, so I have to separate them in my mind. So I'll I read Superman 9, and then I was like, I can't go anywhere near Superman 10 for a while. So I read them right in a row, I won't know the difference between the issues.
Right, it's just one big story, yeah.
So I had read everything, and I was literally writing out the email to you this morning, and I realized that Avengers Twilight, which we knew was going to be patron pick.
Yeah.
A spoiler, I guess. And I thought, oh, I haven't read that yet. I should probably read it before I make the pick.
So did you have a – and I'm not going to ask you what, but did you have a book that was going to be pick of the week before you read Avengers
Twilight? The next two books that we talk about were my two contenders, and I couldn't decide.
Okay.
And so – and I don't know why I didn't – I think I just saw Avengers Twilight and thought it was another dumb spinoff, and I didn't look at the creative team. So this is by Chip Zdarsky and Daniel Acuna. And I mean, I want to say I was three pages in before I was like, fuck, this is my pick of the week. I mean, it was not, and it wasn't even close. And I really was like, I don't really want to make a nostalgic Elseworlds Avengers book to pick. From a thematic standpoint, it's not that interesting. But as I went through it, you know, like these are things we've seen a lot of times. Old man, whatever. This is Captain America as an actual old man. He no longer has the super serum in his system. He meets up with Luke Cage. And by the way, his old black friend, I was like, Sam? Nope. Luke Cage? I just, you know, like it came to me. And like, as I kept going, the message was none of this is like, it's not James Joyce. It's, but it's really nice themes, and it leans into superhero stuff in that, like, basically the world is very different. There was a big event where all the superheroes caused, you know, we've seen that 100 times. This is Kingdom Come in a way. But the thing I thought was kind of cool was that it was very much grounded in our world. Meaning, so if you went 40 years from now, I could see the world being like this. And something happened where basically Tony Stark and Janet Van Dyne's son, James Stark, is, a big, powerful person. And he's against superheroes, and everybody's against superheroes, and there's no filming of anything for some reason. And then there's, you know, the cops on the street are like the Judge Dredd cops. And, you know, again, we have seen all of these themes many times in many terrible things and many good things. But there's a bit where, you know, Steve's like, I don't want to get involved anymore. You know, I can't do a lot. Nobody wants to listen to me. And he sees that on their gigantic TV, there's a documentary about how the Red Skull was misunderstood. And in fact, he'd try to take down Hitler, and he's like, oh, well, we can't have this. And just right there, the idea of the media taking what is truth and changing it into something new, which is the thing that we are seeing. We are seeing it in real time as we go. And I thought, God, that's terrible, but it's utterly believable in the context of this book. And it's a really nice comment on today. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as I kept going, I thought that it coalesced really nicely into a story that that I was very interested in. And as I kept going, it kept getting better. And we had flashbacks to the H day, the hero day. You had some really nice Cap moments. And I really love the way that he was drawn and portrayed. The next thing I would say about this is that, wait, is that not Luke Cage?
Luke Cage,
yep. He shows up later. He looks different.
He's wearing a yellow shirt.
That's fair. He's like Spock in that, he's like Kirk in that chair with that yellow shirt. Yeah. You know, and as I just kept going through it, I thought the structure was really nice, how they explained what happened as he thought about it. It was all just like nuts and bolts, good comic book stuff. And then finally, you may remember sometime in the past few months, I says to you too, who was that guy that we really loved that I haven't seen in a while? And it was Daniel Acuna.
Yeah.
Guy's just showing up here. And he's one of my favorites. And I just hadn't seen him for a while, so I kind of forgot about him. But he's so good. He's doing everything here. You know, he's got some color assists, which I think, unless I'm looking at the wrong book and I forgot to write it down. Nope. He did everything. It was Enfield game. Gang was color assist. I just was really into it. I was like, this, and it's Twilight. And I was like, what the hell does that mean? And I don't know. There was just so much about it that it spoke to me in an entirely different way than like Old Man Hawkeye did, but it still had the same kind of stuff.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, if you're a comic writer and you've been around for a while, you eventually come up with the end of the hero's story and you want to tell it. Like, there's been so many of them, and there's almost nothing in here that's original, but that's okay because the nature of these stories is we'll never have the third act. So exploring everyone's different look at the third act is fun, I think. As you said, there's a lot of Kingdom Come here. There's a little bit of the Private Eye here, at least in the way things look.
Yes. Yeah. I thought I was reading this is, and there's Dark Knight Returns. Like he's taking in, you know, the stuff and building on it. And that's great for me. This really felt like a Brian K. Vaughan book, actually, as I read it.
Cap has no powers. He seems to be happily married to a doctor. He's old. He's got a little bit of an arrhythmia. He's got his, you know, old man glasses. He stays out of the game. He's still got a lovely head of hair though. He stays out of the game.
He's in good shape.
He's still in good shape. He lives among his trophies and his old posters. Only Angels Have Wings is a great film. And you know, he's staying out of it, even though he goes to the park to have sort of hang out with Luke Cage and Matt Murdock. And they're trying to get him back in the game because they're both you know, whatever the game is, they're trying to get him back into it. He just doesn't want to get be part of it because H-Day, whatever it was so horrific. Several things happened. One, I think all the heroes' identities were released. Two, it sounds like most of them died. We see Spider-Man's death in the flashback. And they didn't seem to know each other. So this is all, this is totally just like an Elseworldsy thing. Obviously it is, but you know, then, and then of course, but then going to that, TV debate about Red Skull, he comes out and of course he sees some injustice and he just can't help himself and he gets involved.
Yeah, that was nice.
And then, and at the end, does he get some sort of synthetic super soldier serum?
What I thought was really cool when I was talking about structure earlier was that he mentions early on the serum's not in me anymore, you know, which is a nice and subtle way of telling you happened. And then later he says they took it from me. And I was like, oh, that's different. And they just, they teased out that information.
He didn't give it
in a really nice way. And so, yeah, and then he gets something. You know, they killed a bunch of people. They're making super serum. He trusted it all because he said, well, it doesn't work on everybody. And he trusted it. And they, you know, made him into Captain America again. And, well, super soldier serum. I loved it. It made me really happy. There's a backup story here, which I've read before.
Yeah, this is a reprint. The Coming of the Cursed Avengers.
Yeah. No, yeah, I know. But even so, I think they put it in something else. And I'll be honest with you, I didn't read it, but I looked the hell out of the art. It was Ralph Macchio's script. Yeah,
it's been in many things before. It's almost like a. I think it's Avengers 1 from Loki's perspective.
I think so. Yeah,
but
it's definitely Avengers 1.
Anyway, this was terrific. I didn't even know the last time we saw Daniel Acuña.
He's been on, I think, Black Panther. He was on Black Panther with
Oh, that's right.
It was Black Panther for a while. You know what? If we're praising him, one of the things I really liked was his version of the future. I thought was really good. It was a little sci-fi, but it was like, well, in 30, 40 years, people might dress like this, but this is not how we dress.
No.
You know, and they had...
Well, it's not far off. Like, Cap's got a suit. Yes, he's an old man, but
right.
Tony Stark's son, he's basically in a suit. It's a little strange. It's like...
It's a little goofy.
It's almost like a cape suit, but it's still recognizably a suit. Like, it's not that far off from what we...
And like all the cars look ridiculous. Like you almost don't notice it.
Read between the lines.
Yeah.
Nazi.
Yeah.
I mean,
that was so good.
That's the part to me that gets you, right? Because it's like we see now the way that information is weaponized and truth is weaponized and there's no truth anymore and anyone can say anything on YouTube and have a million people believe them. And so these are the parts of the story that make me feel claustrophobic. Like, when Cap's trying to shout that, no, the Red Skull was a bad guy, and everyone's like, yeah, whatever, old man. I start to get, like, you know, anxiety because this is, like, the world we're living in. And of all the things that happened in this book, it's the most relatable. And you can only imagine what he feels. Another thing we shouldn't mention is that he ran for senator and lost. He tried to help as an elected official, and apparently no one wanted Captain America to be a senator, which is strange. But
but that's what, like, do you remember, like, the Swift Boats with John Kerry? Oh, yeah. And it was just like, this is ridiculous.
That was sort of the first time that sort of happened.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
And it worked. Yeah. And it just, it like clearly it was, and this is that. And it's just getting worse. I mean, obviously we live here.
My only concern is it's only 6 issues.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I guess the question is how big is the story they're going to tell? Although it felt very meaty. It's an oversized book, but it has the backup story in it. So.
The
main story is about 30 pages. That's still oversized. So hopefully, you know, we get like a satisfying story here.
I'm not worrying about that. That's a long way down the road, man. Jeez.
It was very good though. I was very happy. Great. And even the title is not really original. Like Twilight of the Gods was that lost Alan Moore DC story about the end of there. Like everything in here is recycled, but in a very fun way.
I mean, just it's we've said this a lot lately, is I think for a long time, everybody was trying to reinvent the wheel. And right now, I think we have a generation of creators who are like, no, let's do the cool stuff, but bring all of our skills to it. And so you're getting a lot of that, which is like good comic book stories that are not, you know, that are not like, but this time it's like this. It's just, I mean, it's still a future story, but. You know, it's good skill, great skill. That's the thing for me.
Yeah, and I mean, Chip Zdarsky has been hit or miss in the last year or so. mostly because of Batman, but this is good Chip Zdarsky, and this is terrific Daniel Acuña. So if you don't have to have know anything to read this, so you know, if it sounds like fun to you, you should jump in.
Absolutely.
I'm curious about James Bond 007, number one, from Garth Ennis and Rafa Lobosco. I only thought this was like, okay.
All right. So written by Garth Ennis is what gets me in the door.
Sure. That's why
I thought, all right. And it was very much a kind of a cold open. I don't really know what the story is. I don't know what's going on, but I think that what I liked about it was that it was a definite choice on a James Bond, which is like an Ian Fleming kind of James Bond. Yeah. He basically murders Pablo Escobar's entire family in the first scene. And he was like, they were just going to come back for us anyway. And whoever the M is here is just like, anyway, I'm not here to talk about that. And I liked that, just how
he's cold brutish, which is the book version of the character.
Right. And so there was that, which is fun or whatever. But to me, the other thing was, I think there was a lot of Garth Ennis in this. Mm-hmm. And it made me happy. I think it was a bit here where, like I said, I was thinking about it for pick of the week. I don't think I would have because there wasn't enough here. But they get attacked. Bond is going to see an old spy who's standing in the water, and they have a nice conversation. Their suits rolled up to their knees, and some bad guys come and blow them up, or try to blow them up. And then, you know, James Bond blows his car up with a key, and then a man goes flying, and he holds up his stumpy arm, and I just thought, oh, there was just a touch of Preacher there. And also the line that he says, this is the last panel in the comic book. He goes, "And you were," which I was like, that's cold as shit. Yeah. He's still a little alive, you know? There wasn't a lot to it, but I really enjoyed being in the world. I instantly understood what James Bond we were looking at. We got a little adventure in the beginning, and I got a Garth Ennis feeling. And that was enough to make me happy.
I don't disagree with any of that. I think my two main problems, one is you touched on, which is it felt very slight.
Yes.
And two, and this is a Dynamite problem for 99 out of 100 books, is that the art is just substandard. I mean, it's just they spend a lot of money on the writers, and they spend a lot of money on the cover artists, and then usually the interior artist is someone who's upcoming or cheap or whatever, but I didn't like the art at all.
I wasn't great, but I wasn't offended by it. And also, like, I, you know what to expect going in. Mm. You know, you're not always going to find a Bob Q or a, who is that other guy they had?
Art on Red Sonja when Mark Russell did it was solid. And Bob Q did some work there. He did some of that Red Sonja stuff, but it's just, I mean, I get it. I mean, I know that going to Dynamite books, it's just, that's why I don't really love them that much. It's because
I know that going into most Garth Ennis books at this point, like,
he's been doing it. The other publishers had pretty good artists on it.
Yeah. He's not the draw he was. And so in order to do this stuff, I don't know. They're paying for the license. They got to whatever.
No, so I know that the money goes to the license. It goes to the writer. And usually they get a cover artist who they can sell some copies to for people who collect those things. And then the rest,
Dave Johnson.
Is not that good. So I'll read the second issue because I do want to know what the story is. And it's a very much a Cold War, hard as nails, mean James Bond. There's a hammer and sickle on the cover. But beyond that, we don't know what's going on. So I'll see. I'll read a second issue and see what's going on.
It was fun. I enjoyed it.
The most exciting thing for me this week was that John Constantine Hellblazer Dead in America number one came out, which was I guess it's a sequel to the Simon Spurrier, Aaron Campbell, John Constantine Hellblazer book from several years ago that we loved. I think we had four of the six books were pick of the week.
No kidding.
And so to see it come back, which I didn't expect it at all, was exciting to me. That was my
And what was kind of cool was that it picked up. I didn't really remember what happened, but it kind of didn't matter. It was just like, all right, there's this kid who's his son who is deaf. And this Scottish lady, and they did some shit. And I was like, yeah, I kind of remember that. And they're in America now. And what got me, the title is Dead in America. And you kind of found out that John Constantine died. And he's still walking around via magic. But he says a line in here that I thought was really nice. as he's describing anything, and then closes out whatever he's talking about with, I haven't heard my heartbeat in 2 weeks or something like that. Or
right.
Month, whatever it is. And I just thought that was a really
But do
cool,
we know how he died?
I don't remember. Or, I mean, there was a bunch of shit that went down.
I don't remember. Did it happen in that book or was it between books? I don't remember.
I think it probably happened in that book or something. I remember because the part of the thing is that they're wanted because he tricked the kid into killing somebody yeah. who he shouldn't have, and that was a mistake. And John
well, they killed
did
a bunch
that.
Of like English government people. Remember they like yep. attacked Parliament and
yeah.
It's vaguely in my head. We loved the book, but it was a long time ago.
So the other thing I really liked about this was that A, same team, so it was just like jumping back on, and it, you know, it's John Constantine, not the DC version, not, you know, whatever. It's like this is the Vertigo Comics version of that character. You know, the theme of him being using people and knowing that he's going to hurt them and having to do it anyway and kind of feeling guilty about it, but kind of not. But then what really got me here is that, you know how in Batman, they're not shy about using the Joker. Or, you know, in every other book, you know, Lex Luthor's in all the Superman books now or whatever. Right. And yeah. so in this book, Morpheus, I don't know if he's Morpheus, he's Daniel, actually. The Sandman shows up.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, big gun. And then later he goes to see the Swamp Thing. And I was like, this is where Constantine comes from. Like, we spent a lot of time with him and the Sandman. And mm-hmm. other than initially, I think maybe once in the book, but in the Sandman. I don't know that I've seen them together. And it was
right.
him.
I think this flashback
dream.
Here is to that story,
yes.
right? To,
yes, yeah. it is. Yeah, no, it's because he ended up with the bag of his little pouch of sand that the people right. took from him.
If you watched the TV show, you saw the female version of John Constantine fill that role.
She was so good as John Constantine. And she wasn't John, but she was John. And it
Joanna.
Was great. Her apartment was too nice. And then, like I said, at the end, he goes to see Swamp Thing, you know, and Constantine
I loved
comes
that
out of Swamp. I did too. He's a golf course.
He's so they have a double decker English bus. They're driving around America.
That was hilarious.
The details of it don't matter. And he's going to take them to this guy who can help. And they're in Florida. And he's, you know, he created this beautiful home in the bayou for his wife. And he's going to show it to him. And they turn a corner and it's a fucking golf course. And which is like the worst possible thing for John Constantine. But it turns out it's still Swamp Thing. He's still the golf course, mm-hmm. which I thought was funny. I thought the cop bit was a little heavy-handed.
Yes, I agree with you. But I think it was also made up from the fact that the way that they brought Sandman into it was like everyone was getting kind of sleepy and there's a hitchhiker and it's like a dream sequence kind of. I thought that was really nice.
Yeah.
It was really smooth. The cop thing was, but...
There was just no nuance to it. It was just like he was like a... huge stereotype.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, well, I feel like that's like a British guy trying to write the racial situation in America
sure.
right now. But like, it was a good comic though.
It was good Constantine. It was unexpected. I didn't know there was anything coming. I mean, I don't know that anything's coming, but normally it's the same stuff. I've read a solicitation in 1,000 years, but.
Oh yeah, no, we don't read those, but you're just not ready for anything anymore. It's just things come and then.
Yeah, but
don't you deal with them as they come.
Usually it's the same old shit. Usually it's not a thing I really like.
Or just life in general.
Oh, sure. But usually like the comics that come out that I like that went away don't come back and are mm-hmm. just as good as possible. And I've been reading, Damn Them All. What is it called? The boom book that Spurrier's doing that's basically Damn Them All.
That's Constantine, yeah.
You know, I've been reading it. It's okay. It's not bad. It's just like it's not Constantine, but it's supposed to be. And this is just right. better. I think Simon Spurrier is very hit or miss for me.
Yep.
But I think that when he has some constraints, and I believe Kieran Gillen is the same way. When he has some constraints, he does better. When he's left to his own devices to be able to like put all of his imagination out there, which is extensive, it gets too big. But in this, he's got to stay within some lanes, and I think that makes it better.
Yeah, I think that first Constantine miniseries was the best thing I ever read from him. And I've read other things and haven't really liked him that much, but he's very good at this. And that's the thing, you can't, well, I was going to say you can't ever write off anybody, but You never know who the right person and the right property and the right character will come along and it'll work, mm-hmm. even if it's someone whose work you don't normally like. And I think that's, for me, a Cy Spirit. I read the first six issues of that Damn Them All, and when it kept going beyond that, I didn't keep going with it. But
I'm looking forward to it. I think I kept reading it because I was like, well, he's doing Hellblazer, so, and I would read it if it was Hellblazer, so whatever.
And now it is. I also think Aaron Campbell's terrific. I love his sort of gritty style that is sort of realistic, but also fantastical.
That fits right in with the Vertigo Hellblazer. I mean, that's spot on for what that should be. Spot on.
His pages with Daniel were terrific. He does the ghost and not ghost. Well, he does the demon and stuff really, really well.
Yeah.
And like the pages where that one page where he's like Constance walking around his face. I mean, not mm-hmm. literally, but that's the construction of the page was terrific.
It was a really well-written Sandman too. Cause he does that thing where he kind of is everything at once. Like he's kind of nice and sweet. And then he can be really scary cause he's so powerful.
Right.
And I thought that was done really well. And, you know, the lettering's a dead giveaway. When that happened, I was like, because that was the thing at the end of the book when he, you know, was reborn as Daniel instead of Morpheus, like it went from black with white lettering to white or black on white, but different, stylized. Right. Todd Klein. Shout out to Todd Klein, everyone. And so there was that, which was nice.
Let's take a little bit of an early break here to talk about how the best to support the show. We have a bunch of other books to talk about. This was the best place to put the break. This is a listener-supported show. That's how the new media works. Most things are listener-supported, fan-supported. And we thank everyone who supports the show. There are many ways. I'm going to run down through them real quick because we have a lot to talk about. Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's our main source of support. You can go there and be part of a great community. iFanboy.threadless.com is our merch store. We've got 13 designs. You can put on all kinds of merch, including t-shirts. iFanboy.com/support is our digital PayPal tip jar. iFanboy.com/Amazon is a great place to shop. We get a little piece of each sale. It doesn't come out of your pocket. It comes out of the organization's pocket. You can find links to our Booksplode books on that page, but also just a general shopping link. And click it and forget it, or bookmark it and forget it. We appreciate that very much. And also bookshop.org is our partner for local, to help out local bookstores. If you buy a book from them, you can designate the money from your sale, go to a particular bookstore or just to a general fund that is shared amongst all participating bookstores. And so those are all great ways to help support iFanboy in our various shows. And hopefully you enjoy them enough that one day you feel like you might want to do so. And we thank you very much and appreciate that.
We have come to the end of the Enfield Gang Massacre. And I liked this a lot. I feel like, I don't know, I feel like maybe part of the story didn't evolve. Like it kind of ended quickly, yeah. But also I can't argue with what happened in the story. And I think that what saved this for me was, what saved it for me is I really love the aesthetic of it. And I think that these people, I think the Chris Condon and Jacob Phillips just like really like living in this, you know, genre, and it's kind of just fun to be in there with them. But there's a bit where basically they catch the bad guy and they've all schemed the good guy who's their bad guy. All of the
law enforcement. The guy being framed for the murders.
Right. Law enforcement have schemed and colluded to get to this point where they're going to hang him. And you see a situation where incredibly unbelievably the wife grabs a gun, gets out of the thing, shoots, and they move off. We see time. They raise a family and they grow old. And I was reading like, that's so weird. Why is this happening? And then we snap back to real life as his neck is snapped and he hangs from the gallows, and it's the end of the story. And it got me. Like, yeah. At first I was like, this doesn't make any sense. And then they snap you back to reality. And I was like, that's right. It doesn't make any sense because, and they even remind us in the letter, in the essay at the end, which I read some of because it's the end. I can read it at the end. We saw him as a corpse at the very beginning of the book, which I forgot about.
Yep.
So you know it's not going to end well.
Well, and he had to die. He was it's the past. He would have died eventually. I thought this was overall a disappointment, despite the fact that we loved the first issue a lot. And I thought the ending was strong. And I wonder if I'll be less disappointed if I sit down and read them all together.
I enjoyed reading every issue.
Yeah.
My complaint was really about when I stand back and I look at it from a distance, I was like, oh, I feel like I wanted that to develop more. But I don't know that it should have. I mean, that's the choice. Six issues, it's whatever. If it was an ongoing, that'd be true, but it isn't.
They say at the end there's going to be more That Texas Blood coming.
I would hope so.
Says, no more infield, but we'll be back with some more That Texas Blood. Just bear with us.
So. His essays are so earnest. Like, he's just, I'm just so happy to be here, and thank you so much, and this is what we love to do, and I love it. It's very sweet.
I mean, overall, I was happy the book came out. We don't often get just a straight-up Western without a demon or a monster or whatever, and so that, I'm not all bummed about the book. I just feel like the middle lost the thread a little. I'd like to go back and read them all and see if I still feel that way.
I think part of that feeling is that you want the actual bad guys in this to get some comeuppance, and they get none. So the whole time other sheriff guy or whatever he is.
Well, there's a Texas Ranger, and then there's the other.
Right, the Ranger. And he's like, he knows what's happening, and you think he's going to get him, but he don't.
I don't think that's the case, because I think the case is that I don't understand why anything happened, I think. Like, we know that this guy, not the Ranger, but the guy with the black goatee and the black hat. Haha, it's really obvious who's the bad guy. Killed the two people in the first issue. We didn't see it till later. But I don't know that we ever know why or why anything was happening or why he was framing the infield. Like, I think that was what bugs me a little bit. Maybe I'll go back and read it and it'll be clearer.
I think that they just wanted to get him because he'd been robbing folks or banks or whatever for a long time.
But the guy is clearly evil because he like disemboweled mm-hmm. them. It wasn't just like he shot them. Like, it was something about that. And so I'm just curious as, you know, why anything happened.
that is a fair criticism.
You made me read Creepshow, or you told me to read Creepshow number 5.
I said check it out. It was a soft recommend. Yeah.
And I try to do what you say to do.
Sure.
So I read it. I read the first story.
Yeah, that's all I said. Yeah. This Creepshow, an anthology of like Creepshow. It was a thing. It was a TV show, but it was a comic too, and it created the genre. So, you know, two morality tales as gross out little horror stories. Salad and Ahmed and David D.B. Andre and Tim. Salad and Ahmed and Artyom Toplin on the first story, and you got yourself a Wortham kind of guy, and all comic books are bad or whatever, and he gets trapped inside a comic book, and like the panels start cutting him and slicing him to bit. And so for a Wortham guy to get stuck inside a comic, I just thought it was a fun way, and I haven't seen in a while, to mess with the form and sort of acknowledge that you're in a comic book.
The art was terrific. I'll get to that in a second. The art reminded me a little bit of, who was the guy that used to do the books with Kyle Starks, or does the books with Kyle Starks? Schweitzer?
Chris Schweitzer. Reminded
me a little bit of Chris Schweitzer. So this is like a guy running for governor who's going to burn comics. He does big comic book bonfires, and he gets caught inside the comic, and he ends up burning. You know, all very ironic, as these stories are end up being. You need to check out, another book doing this sort of thing also is Local Man that Tim Seeley is doing an Image. And we very recently had the main character take hallucinogens and be high for two issues. And the last issue, he started walking through the ads in the book and all the other stuff and commenting on everything and being able to see the sound effects, like just like here. So it was very similar kind of thing, less bloody and gory. But
And the thing about this book that's fun is that the bad guys always get their comeuppance in it, and it's terrible. Oh,
for sure.
And I enjoy that.
It looked very, I skimmed the second story. It looked somewhat similar.
I really like the art on the second story. That was by David Andre and Tim Daniel, with art by Matthew Roberts. Basically, monster under the bed, and his parents don't believe him. They're jerks. And the monster says, you got to give me something you love if you don't want me to eat you. And so he starts giving him comics. The kid's super into comics. Mm-hmm. And at the end, the kid becomes the monster under the bed, but the monster really liked him and he liked his comics, so he was never going to eat him at the first place. By the way, the kid's parents get eaten. There's your spoiler. It was good. I love the art in that second one. That was beautiful.
It was very good.
Yeah. This book's great. It's a good issue. Every time. It's great, great talent on it.
Fantastic Four 709 or 16. This is Ryan North's first issue doing the kids. It's a kid centric story. The Valeria and Franklin and the two space kids. didn't really love the Francesco Mortarino art. It was fine. The faces were a little pinched, but that's okay. I thought it was a fun story. I don't want to do the kids all the time, though. But I think every once in a while, the kids get the spotlight. That's fine.
I thought it was a fun one. You know, like the geniuses, but they don't have the maturity. So there's hubris. They're smug. I really like that, like, Reed and Sue's kids are smug. They're rich kids, really. I mean, more or less, you know, their parents work really hard for everything and they're super geniuses. And these people are super geniuses too. But, you know, they've had it easy in a way, or
they're celebrities. They've got abilities, or at least they had abilities. You know, they hang out with famous people. They're celebrity kids. And so they go to a new high school in this small town because they're all forced to flee New York after the disaster that, you know, of the whole building thing. And so they think in this small town high school, they're going to rule it. You know, everyone's going to love them. And at first they do, and then it very quickly turns on them.
I really like that the story isn't that some shit happened to New York and they're solving that problem. That's all mm-hmm. just a reason to have them not be there and to be right. in other places. And that's wonderful. You know, that's not the reason that, like, that's not the thing they're trying to fix.
Right.
I love you how know, quickly
it was fun that the hubris was the fun part, right? Like they thought they could invent this thing. There's the ultimate solvent, and it's so good.
I love quickly it escalated. Like it kept getting worse, and they were like, "We solved it." No, like you didn't solve it.
I mean, and to be fair, they did it. They invented it. They just said it was so much of an ultimate solvent that it burns through everything into the center of the Earth, and you know it becomes like a real big problem that involves two spaceships and. I mean, this was really, really well done, Ryan North stuff.
Again.
But I think, yeah. So, good stuff still. I mean, I guess it adds another dimension to the story, but I enjoyed it. I don't think we have talked about this particular Batman Superman World's Finest storyline yet. I know Ryan and I talked about the first or the second issue around Thanksgiving when you were not on the show, but I don't think you and I have talked about...
No, we haven't. And
what's going on here.
Yeah, I mean, this is the prequel to Kingdom Come, if I'm not mistaken.
But is it?
It's not anymore, is it? I guess.
No, that's what I felt since like the very beginning. Right. Like this none of this makes sense in the terms of Kingdom Come anymore. These characters,
yeah.
None of this. As Ryan and I said, talking about it earlier, unless this ends in a giant mind wipe, there's no way this is actually the Kingdom Come universe mm-hmm. because it just does. These characters would, you know, none of this would make sense for them, but. Are you liking it?
Yeah. Yeah, I wasn't sure going back and forth, but the fact is I never understood Gog and Magog anyway. Right. So I think probably the thing that I liked the most is that for a little while you're watching the Batman and Superman of that world act a way that you're like, they're not going to do this. But as soon as like Batman twigged to something, it all changed and they went there and you find out that also were they not fooled because the big bad has Gog has like super pheromones, makes everybody like him or whatever.
Right.
I don't know. Patient it's power. Big and stupid and it's by Mark Waid. And
I want to point something out to you. I think you'll like,
okay.
Go to page 22.
It's going to be a second here.
Gog is giant, right? He's a giant person or whatever he is. And so on page 21, both Supermen punch him in the chin and he falls down. Fall down good.
Yeah.
And look at that first panel on page 22 where he's hitting the ground. Thoom. Mm-hmm. There's nothing for context in this panel. So to our eyes, he can look like a regular person. But
right.
The way that Dan Mora is tight on the body and is under the shoe.
Yeah.
We get a sense of scale without anything to show it. Do you know what I mean?
No, absolutely. It's a great. Like he looks, it's a great pickup.
He feels like a giant, just from the way they've angled the art, and that's an amazing bit of storytelling.
It is, and it's the same. The Supermen are in the panel or in the page of the panel before that, but he's still done it. He's the hand is right in front of us, which does give you that scale, and then that.
Oh yeah, in that page for sure. But in the next one, there's nothing in the page that panel but him. So it's all basically good.
He's using the same technique, but he's taken the figures out to do it. And there's a lot of Kirby in that, like the best kind. He's got a lot of skill, this guy. He's got an enormous amount of craft.
And often you talk about disliking the final page character reveal, but this one was very good.
Yeah. Yeah, and you thought, well, we've avoided this. And then, you know, that character shows up, and they didn't. It's funny. They were like, that chair is familiar. I was like, it's the Mobius chair.
Guys, come on.
You'd know this.
Well, I guess, no, they would. You're right. No, they would. All right. So now let's take a turn. I was thinking about making this a corner, but you went ahead and did it. So I'm glad you did. The G.I. Joe corner. And we have two G.I. Joe books to talk about. And so first, you know, it was just 1 week ago that we talked about the Energon universe and how it might be the most exciting thing in comics right now. We had Transformers, and we had what else did we have last week? Just Transformers?
Just that one? Well, Duke. But that may have already happened. Yeah,
that wasn't last week.
But it was in the context of the thing.
So we were talking about Transformers and G.I. Joe and how it was all very exciting and everything was awesome. And then Cobra Commander came out. And threw a big old wet blanket on it.
Okay, so I'm not willing to go that far, but I don't disagree either.
The art was terrific. So this is Josh Williamson and Andre Milana. I thought the art was wonderful. Cartoony and hard-edged, and I liked it a lot.
So I'm just going to let this out. Joshua Williamson, who did the fantastic Duke book previously.
Yep.
He's also doing the Cobra Commander book. Great art, like you said. But we start doing, you know, origin of Cobra Commander, and he's in Cobra Law. So we go back to the Cobra Law era. We learn more. Stay with me. It is canon. It is canon. And I think the same
thing.
Was it
ever in the comics?
That's a good point.
It's just the cartoon. Just cartoon canon.
Yeah, that's true. But this, I don't know what this is. It doesn't matter. They're going to pick and choose. It's like when they go to the prequel stuff in Star Wars. It is. I can't do anything about it. And so, being that, I really like, I love Cobra Commander. He's one of my favorite villains of all time, and he's so useless. And in this world where there's going to be Transformers, I can make an allowance for there being a Cobra Law, and I have to have it be ridiculous. And if this is what I'm going to get, then that's what I'll get, and it's fine. I don't love it. I wish that it was a world where that wasn't it. But there's a Cobra Commander comic, and you know, it's going to be ridiculous, then let it be. I'm fine.
The writing isn't bad. You know, like, it wasn't a badly made comic. No. It's just I find Cobra Law so offensive. And I'm going to be clear. I found it offensive as a kid.
I did, too.
When the movie came out.
100% did.
And they turned fucking Cobra Commander into a fucking snake, and there was Globulus and
Nemesis Enforcer.
And Nemesis Enforcer, and what's and the her lady. Name?
The lady.
What is her name? If only Kindle would let me enlarge the page.
She was unmemorable.
Anyway, as a kid, I went, I don't want any of this. I did. I didn't like it. I didn't like any of it.
I did too. And
so
that being said, I love that movie.
I love the movie up until the point where they go to Cobra Law.
I love the movie. It's ridiculous. So
when that happened here, I was not super thrilled. Pythona is her name.
Because that's a bad name. The other ones are memorable. That's not memorable. That's like a Thundercats name. Yeah. Oh, I would Panthero. Hug you so Panthero. Good right now.
So, I mean, there's two saving graces in this, and we'll talk about the second one in one minute, but I couldn't tell from this book, and it seems as if Cobra Commander is not from Cobra Law, that they just rescue him? Is that what you got from this?
No, he
was from Cobra Law.
He was like the Jor-El of Cobra Law, maybe. I don't know. Maybe there was a detail about that.
My reading of it, and again, I'm just desperate for Kindle to work, is that he ended up there and lived there for a while, becoming the Jor-El of Cobra Law.
Okay.
But that's I don't possible. Know if that's accurate or not.
Well, we don't get to see his face.
which is the way it should be.
Wait, but there is like a weird eye on his face. No, that's one of their like bug things. Maybe if he's just a human and wasn't a snake, then that's okay.
See, the whole... well, hold on. Let me see here.
You've just given me a reason to be even more okay with it.
Well, maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he's always lived there.
Here's what the funny thing is that he's in the hospital bed with gross bug juices everywhere.
Uh-huh.
And he gets summoned by Globulus, and he walks out in his fucking straight-up Cobra Commander uniform.
Right.
Well, I was like, why does he have that if this is that long ago? I don't know.
Right, right.
But if we're talking about an Energon universe, we're talking about alien robots and then all the other stuff that we know is going on in Void Rivals, you can't say this doesn't exist. If well, you're no. going to put the Transformers
it's not beyond
in
the
it.
Pale. I just don't like it. It look, none of this, this is all, the Energon stuff is a whole different continuity. They can do whatever they want with it.
Sure.
But I just was so excited because I've loved everything so far. Duke was terrific. And then this was just like a kick in the nuts, which is fine. But, you know,
I really wanted to enjoy it. And so I leaned into the part of it that I enjoy.
However, finding out that Megatron is a captured Megatron is the reason why Cobra Commander has been able to invent all this cool stuff was interesting. I don't know how that fits into seeing Megatron in the Transformers book in a different scenario, but hopefully we'll find out.
And there's going to be Dreadnoughts.
Yeah, so... yeah, I need to reread this issue. It was hard to read through the blood in my eyes. So
it's fine.
I might have missed a detail.
And then
thank
so over
God
the same
for G.I. Joe.
G.I. Joe, Real American Hero number 303 by Larry Hama, who is age 74. And by the way, fascinating life on this guy. I went and refreshed myself on Larry Hama's life. And it's just he's delightful.
You know what's interesting is that Chris Mooneyham is very similar in style to Andy Kubert, who's doing the covers.
Yes. And yeah, I see that.
And it's like, I get it. Andy Kubert is a name and sells, but like, Mooneyham could just do the covers. He's almost the same artist.
Yeah. Well, I figure they make about half their money from cover artists at this point.
Yep.
I like a lot of this, and it should be noted that right now I am watching the G.I. Joe cartoon, reading the G.I. Joe comics and into this, and I'm starting to get a little like, you know when people do too many drugs and yep. and the edges of reality? Like, that's kind of where I am.
How many continuities are you dealing with? Four?
Three, I think.
Three, yeah, no, three, because this is part
it's
of the
three.
Original one. Three continuities.
I guess this technically is the same. It's just a different time in the original one.
I had that problem myself, and I'm not even watching the cartoon. I was reading the collection that we're going to do the Booksplode on today, and I was starting to lose it a bit because I was just, you know, I was like, wait a minute, what? Because there's a lot of G.I. Joe. It's a lot of G.I. Joe.
That is a good way to be. The thing that at the beginning, like, you've got Cobra Island they all turn themselves into zombies, but slowly over time, Serpentor and Dr. Mindbender. It's Genghis Khan Serpentor, who looks like Genghis Khan, by the way, which is a nice addition. They don't seem to be zombies anymore.
Right.
They're pretty much people who are just kind of screwed up. And I'm cool with that. I like that. We need to stop Snake Eyes from talking. We need to do it right now.
Well, that was my main concern. So, you know, they have these AI bats, like next generation bats.
Blue ninjas.
Bat ninjas who they have just deployed here, and they're attacking several places, including the G.I. Joe base. But one of the places they attack is Snake Eyes' cabin, where he is. He and Scarlet are living with their new dog. And of course, these AI ninjas have bitten off more than they can chew. I understand that Snake Eyes is now a clone of some other version of Snake Eyes. But that clone should not have vocal cords that work.
I mean,
just like the one he's cloned from.
I figure they got to take it away at some point. It doesn't. You know what? Let him have what?
I don't see the Arash tattoo either.
Well, he wouldn't have it.
Right. This is a problem.
Maybe this will all be paid off.
Could be.
I gotta love a scene where some people come in to get Snake Eyes and they don't know what they bargained for, and he kicks the shit out of him. He's the Wolverine of this world.
And Scarlet. Let's not discount Scarlet.
Yeah, no, I get that too. But he's the one jumping around doing cool shit. She's rad.
Well, she takes that one guy down with the giant thing here. But, yeah, no, he started talking. I went, what? Because I realized you and I came in at the very end of the run before.
Yes.
We came in at like 295 or something. We don't know exactly what's been going on. We didn't know why there was two snake eyes. We didn't know what was happening. So maybe there's context for why he talks.
Hey, but it was delightful to not know what was happening and be like, what? Why is that? Yeah. Who's? That was a big part of the appeal.
Yes. No, I agree. Mooneyham draws the hell out of this sequence, by the way.
Yes, he does.
Terrific dynamic angles coming up from below, past the bats to see the snake eyes and scarlet in the rafters. And then, you know, really fun sword fighting AI robot ninjas. And really, the art in this is just terrific. How can he keep this up?
Yeah. Good stuff.
Also, a really good spirit.
Great spirit.
Spirit is watching from the water tower. That's how he protects the base.
By the way, sometime around episode 15 or so, G.I. Joe cartoon gets really good. All the other characters start showing up, and it's just like Quick Kicks over there. There's Snow Job. There's Barbecue. Oh, I can't wait till it starts happening in the comics. I can't wait.
This base is in Utah. It should be in Staten Island.
Should be Fort Wadsworth. Six stories down.
I'm just happy that this came out the same week. If this hadn't come out the same week as Cobra Commander, I might have been distraught. But it was okay. Again, Cobra Commander, not badly made. Just
lean into it.
It's taking the only part of G.I. Joe I dislike.
Decide going back that you decide that you want to enjoy Cobra Commander as much as you can. We're in a world where there's more Cobra Commander, and it doesn't matter. It's all lies. Lies!
You were doing that once and like hurting yourself?
So the problem with that, by the way, the Cobra Law thing, is that at the beginning there's a guy, and I thought that was going to be Cobra Commander because he yells retreat several times. And I was like, well, that must be Cobra Commander.
Right. That's what he does. Retreat.
If somebody yells retreat, it needs to be either Starscream, who yells retreat in the last issue of Transformers, or Cobra Commander. Retreat! So good.
It's just way more powerful if he is basically a charismatic cult leader as opposed to a supernatural soldier. You know what I mean?
All he needs to be is an overconfident, arrogant buffoon.
Right. But that comes from being a nobody as opposed to, you know, a snake
man. He's a nobody in the snake world, too.
He can't catch a break.
This is what I'm talking about, but he doesn't accept it.
Patreon.com/iFanboy is how you can vote to add a book to the rundown. If you're a patron, every patron gets to add a book to the rundown. The final book we talk about, it's called The Patron Pick. And this week, the votes were spread out a bunch of books. The winner was the leader the entire time. However, it got close towards the end, but it ended up being Avengers Twilight Book 1, which Josh spoiled earlier. And so we already talked about it, but we can rate it.
Ratings
on Avengers Twilight Book 1. I'm going to give it a 4.25.
4.4. That's what I'm saying.
Sticking with it, yes.
Obviously, yes.
We're both obviously. We're in for the whole business.
I can't wait. Even if it was just Acuna, I don't think I could. God, he's good.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. If you're a patron, every patron gets a vote to add a book to the rundown, but if you give it the $5 or higher level, you get a superpower live on the show. It's called the Patron Power. We like alliteration. We are comic fans, after all.
Mm.
And this week's Patron Power goes to Chris Malloy. Chris Malloy's power is that his hands can grow to 3 times the size of normal hands.
Hmm.
Just 3 times.
At will?
Yes, he can make them grow and shrink back to normal.
Is he able to do sizes in between?
No, they just grow big.
So there's only normal size and 3X.
Yep.
Okay. Okay.
Big palooka hands.
I'm trying. Does his relative strength, does he lose, like is it harder to wield large hands for him, or is it the same as if they were his regular hands?
It's mostly the same. He can't do the fine detail work that smaller hands could do, but you know, you get hit with one of those palooka hands, you're in trouble.
I think, and
that's
I don't
name,
mean
by
to.
The way. That's a superhero.
I was going to say the power is Palooka hands. Like that's what they can retract. Retractable Palooka hands.
He's like Wolverine's claws, but with hands,
and much less effective.
Well, again, you can punch with a like make a fist. Now imagine that fist three times as big.
That's can it be really fast?
What do you
like
mean?
Did like can he like so like say that he winds up to slap the bad guy, and like as he pulls back, it's normal, and then he comes forward the second that he makes contact,
for sure.
Full size. Okay,
and that'll be a surprise.
Because that guy didn't see it coming.
He's like, whoa. I got palooka'd.
I didn't realize he was that kind of palooka when he started to.
Chris Malloy, you got palooka hands. Thanks for being a patron. Patreon.com/iFanboy. Let's
that try got that. Funnier as it went on. Like we developed it, and I think that was good.
Let's we can do at least one email here. Let's do Craig M. I'm sorry, Greg M. from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Greg says, last year I submitted a question where I gave you a list of characters and asked you to name the first writer and artist you associate with that character. This year it's the same game but different. Below is a list of creators, and I'd like you to each name either the first character or piece of work that comes to mind. For example, if I said Greg Rucka, you could say
Queen
Lazarus, or you could say The Question. Please note that if one jamoke takes an answer, that answers off the board. So if I said Neil Adams and someone said Batman, Batman cannot be said for the rest of the game. Is that how we're playing this, Josh?
I don't. I've tried really hard not to look at this, and I thought you would read these to me. I wrote some more for you, but
that's fine. You're just answering.
Mm-hmm. You can answer after. But I'm not doing. Here's what I'm going to put the. We cannot reuse a character.
Right.
But the other person can. Like if we both. But if we both are like. If it's like Neil Adams and we both want to see Batman, I mean.
That violates Greg's rules.
I don't like Greg's rule because the intent is to say the first thing that comes to mind. And if a person, you know,
Greg's
Josh
trying to make it harder as the game goes.
Right. But then what happens is by not being able to do what you said, then you're not saying the first thing that comes to mind. You're coming up with a second answer, which is irrelevant to the.
Therein
what's your
lies
first
the challenge,
instinct.
I believe.
I don't like it.
All right. Josh is tossing your rules out the window.
Okay.
So I'm reading these names.
Mm-hmm.
All right. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 names.
And I've tried not to really look at them or think about it. So okay. I've tried to not.
First name,
mm-hmm.
John Byrne.
Superman.
Wolverine.
Interesting.
Well, I couldn't help but play by the rules.
Okay, that's fine.
That's Alan
a good
Moore.
Answer. Watchmen.
League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Okay.
George Perez.
See, I was going to say Superman again, but I got to say Avengers then.
Louise Simonson.
God, the only thing I know is Superman X Factor.
Oh, did she not?
You can say Superman.
No, you've already said it. That's right, fine. I'll take you. Fine, Superman. Did she not do? Mm-hmm. Did she not do Thor? She didn't do Thor. Just
no,
Walt.
Just Walt. I think she
this
did everything.
This says Robert Kirkland.
She's like the Costco Image Comics.
He paper towels.
Free samples.
I'm assuming Robert Kirkman. So I'm going to say
Invincible is what comes to mind.
Kelly Most Thompson. People.
Captain Marvel.
Oh.
It's fine. Whatever.
Brian Michael Bendis. Spider-Man.
Daredevil.
I thought of Spider-Man right away. In my head, I pictured Ultimate
Daredevil's
Spider-Man.
What came up. That's what it was.
Tom King.
Adam Strange.
Mr. Miracle. Josh, you have a list?
I do. Here's the list.
Okay.
And I'll read and you go first.
Okay.
Doug Mensch.
Batman.
I don't even have one for it. I just wrote these for you. Fabian, I made these harder. Fabian Nicieza.
I mean, assume one of the X teams. It wasn't really a guy I read much in the 90s.
Thunderbolts. X-Men. He took over after Kurt Busiek.
Okay.
Keith Giffen.
Justice League.
New 52. Or 52.
52, yeah.
Yeah. Rick Remender.
Fear Agent.
Captain America is what just came into my head.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
He's going to love that answer from you.
I know. Well, whatever. You said Fear Agent, which would have been the thing I'd say. J. Michael Straczynski.
Superman walking the earth.
Spider-Man with arms.
Spider-Totem?
Spider-Totem. Iron Spider was great. Mark Miller.
Oh, the Authority. Wow. Didn't expect that.
Whoa.
And I hated that run.
Yeah.
And you said right. Flash?
He took over the Flash.
Oh, I know. I'm just surprised. I'm shocked at myself that the Authority was a pop in my head, but I'm equally shocked that you said the Flash. Because he did like 3 issues of Flash.
I would have said the Authority, but the thing is, the Flash was the first time I ever heard of him.
He did like That's 3 why. Issues with Grant Morrison.
Right. I remember that. That's the first time I was introduced to him.
Brains are funny.
Yes, they are. Mark Waid.
Flash.
Kingdom Come.
You just said it.
One more.
Yep.
Brian K. Vaughan.
Oh. I went blank.
Ex Machina.
I went blank and then Doctor Strange popped in.
There you go.
I like had a little stroke there or something. A little comic book stroke.
Pretty good.
That was good. I like that. That was fun.
Yeah, that was fun. That was fun.
Thanks, Greg.
Yeah.
We like games.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one.
If you have a game, let us know.
Yeah, come up with more of these. We'll play.
I kind of want to do the second email.
Go ahead.
Matt in C. What does that mean?
CT. Connecticut.
Oh, Connecticut. I might have accidentally deleted the T.
There's another letter there.
I think I deleted that by accident. I think I had the
key. That makes sense.
Matt in Connecticut. Dear iFanboy, or specifically Josh, I also have fallen into the Patrick O'Brien hole. My local library has a healthy selection of the books, and I'm 43, so it seemed like the time was right to start fantasizing about a life at sea. If you could time travel back to the Napoleonic War and start a new life at sea, what rank job would you prefer to hold on the ship? Also, what type of ship would you be your preference? Bonus points for going into gratuitous historical detail. This is almost a meat spilled question, but we'll take it.
So those of you at home might know that I've been going through the Aubrey Mashburn books. What do you mean?
Did you talk about it on this show or the Media Split show?
I believe it made it all the way. There was definitely a patron power that had to do with this at some point, and it came up.
I think it was this show. It must have been this show.
It doesn't.
If it wasn't this show, Ron would have really torn into you. So there must have been
I'm at the halfway point. I just started book 11.
It should be noted that I read one of them. I read the Master Commander book when the movie came out.
Yeah.
I don't know where it is. I tried looking for it at my mom's house over the Christmas. I thought it was there, but I couldn't find it.
Well, number 10 is The Far Side of the World, which is the movie was a combination of those two. And it's markedly different. For example, you know how in the movie they're chasing the French, the Acheron? They're chasing a French. Well, they are. They're chasing a French boat. But it's Americans in the book. And I was like, I see why they changed that. then there's a thing where Aubrey and Maturin are stranded and Maturin falls out the back window of the ship and Jack goes after him and the boat doesn't notice it because people are singing up on deck. And so they are stuck at sea for a while and they're rescued by a gang of Polynesian women who seem to have like killed all the men and they're stuck on the boat for a while. Shit's crazy. It's nuts. It's so good. Anyway, part of the reason that I read books like this, both history and fictional history, is that I imagine, like, well, how would I fare in a thing like this?
How quickly will I die?
Yeah, there's a lot of that. But here's the thing, is that my mother's side of the family, they were seafaring folks. Like, they genuinely, that's what they did. They lived on the coast.
You didn't get those genes.
I mean, I don't know. I would like to say... just from reading about it, I'd much rather be an officer. I think it's very likely. I think that I could be, like a purser or something like that, like a non-commissioned.
What does a purser do for the people?
Not exactly sure. A bosun maybe. Like the purser, I think, is in charge of the
money,
like a quartermaster.
Yeah, charge of the money.
Like they make sure that
expenditures.
I hope that I'm not wrong about that. It's going to be embarrassing. They can do the stuff. Maybe they were a seaman at some point, you know, one of the hands, but an able seaman, like a first rate, not
who cleans up all the vomit?
Just a lubber. Well, usually folks are impressed. Uh-huh. And they'll take kind of anybody to fill out the complement of the ship, and they'll put some lubbers on there, and you know, their job would be to do the non-seamanship stuff. So it's clean, constant, the deck is constantly being cleaned, everything is being polished. You know, someone's got to clean stuff,
and those are the people who have been kidnapped to work on the boat.
Pull ropes. It wasn't kidnapping, it was lawful. But yes, that was they were pressed.
They were kidnapped legally.
I mean, but sure, I would like to wear the hat athwart like Nelson did, as opposed to like the younger people did
with the glass the telescoping glass to look at things far away. Is that what you want?
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I really like the clothes. I would want to wear the clothes and the hands. They didn't do
the
that.
Boots.
They just wore whatever. Yeah. Oh, and like when you were a kid, did you think it would be rad to have an epaulet?
Sure.
I want epaulets. I want a person to do that. I just want to say, bring the sherry, and they do.
Someone does. Some poor bastard who got kidnapped brings you sherry. Yeah. I think what Matt needs to understand is, especially living on the coast in Connecticut, it's totally normal to fantasize about a life at the sea, especially around 43. I definitely do. It's my go-to joke is I'm just going to go to the sea now. I have an old seaman picture of a captain with a grizzled beard and a hat and a heavy wool turtleneck and a corncob pipe that I will often send as a response to something distasteful, which means it's time for me to go to the sea. That's, I think, normal. I think we all stand to the coast, look out in the sea, put our hands behind our backs, clasp them, and think maybe life would be simpler there. That's normal.
And that's true. That's a big part of the books is that on sea, everybody knows their place. They know what they have to do. When things are bad, you can't do anything about it. Push through it and weather it. And all of the complications of life are actually gone because you don't have to make choices. You just have
it's
to
just
get
survival.
Through things. Yeah. And so scurvy. The purser is an officer on the ship who keeps the accounts. So yeah, that's what I was.
I just, you know, I think it's totally normal to be like, you know what? Maybe it's time for a life at the sea. But leave it all behind.
I mean, that happened. Sometimes voluntarily, sometimes not.
Thanks for Matt and Greg for writing in. That was super fun. We got some good emails over the break. We could always use more because they're fun to do. Plug time.
Emails have been good so far.
Yeah, they've been real strong,
real solid. Yep.
Not a bad one in the bunch. This past week, we had our Media Splode show come out right behind this show on the feed, where Josh and I and our buddy Ron talked about all the things we watched and one thing we listened to over the holiday break while we were off from recording. Lots of stuff. More than you would think. And the show got progressively more antagonistic in a funny way. That was
depends on who you are.
it was funny. In the beginning, it's like, are we being antagonistic because we hate each other? And then it was like, no, we're just being us. So it was enjoyable.
Rose.
This coming week, this very week, if you can't get enough G.I. Joe talk, and I know some of you definitely can get enough. You said so.
Some of you reached that level years ago.
And we apologize.
And yet?
It's not going to stop, though.
I don't. I do not apologize. I love it so much. And I don't love it less as time goes on. I love it more.
Well, you're watching the cartoon, for God's sake. So
it's
this
so
coming
good.
Week is our Booksplode show, the first one of the year. We're going to be looking at Classic G.I. Joe Volume 1, which is the first 10 issues of the one of the most important comics ever published, G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero.
Or
so
more.
That's coming up. This coming...
We're only promising 10, but I can't tell you for sure that I won't talk about 14, 16. I don't know.
All right. Well, we'll see. But that's happening.
I got to get to 21. I know that much.
This coming week. So look for that. Then there's another one. And then in 2 weeks, the Animation Brain Trust is going to talk about Justice League Crisis on Infinite Earths Part 1.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. It's a lot of stuff.
They haven't done that yet?
They're doing it now.
Of course they are. They're running out of stuff. You can find our library of over 1,300 shows, and I think about 900 of them are about DC animated movies. over at iFanboy.com, wherever podcasts are sold. You can follow at iFanboy Comics on Instagram. You'll find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out. And sometimes you will find the best of the week in panels. I suspect you may find less of that in the coming year.
Do you think I should be breaking into Volume 2? Is that what you're saying?
I mean, you should anyway.
I was going to, but
something
for the
in
show.
There.
All right.
It's not going to hurt.
All right, fine.
It's almost a 40-year-old book.
People I'm enjoying the hell out of it. I already had that thought. I didn't think I need to do it for the show.
Yeah,
but
I'm not saying, but I'm also not telling you I'm not going to, if there's not something. Because here's the thing, we're doing 1 through 10. 11 is Welcome to Springfield.
And 11 that's is where the mythology starts.
That's when shit
we'll
pops
get into that
off.
The show. Yeah, we'll and get
he
to
meets,
the show.
I think that's Chris that he meets in that issue, but we don't know who that is yet.
I think so, for sure.
Oh my God, I'm so excited. I haven't read him for 20 years. I cannot tell you how excited I am to keep doing this.
All right, so where are we?
CS Kilpatrick and J.A. Flanagan on Instagram. Wrap
subscribe
it up.
To youtube.com/iFanboy. You'll find this show there. You'll find all of our old video shows. In fact, there is a G.I. Joe show. In fact, there is. If you can't get enough and you've never seen it, go back, go to our YouTube page, search iFanboy G.I. Joe. You'll find the whole show we did on G.I. Joe and our fandom and our love of it. We even sing the damn theme song on the show.
G.I. Joe, the name of of America's Special Missing Forces, determinist of the forces of Cobra. I don't have it exactly right. But
Cobra
I've
Command.
Heard it, so.
That's because they changed it often.
Cobra
anyway,
Command. Yes, they do.
In the comics, it's Cobra Command.
A ruthless,
please consider
terrible or terrorist organization.
Yeah, well, they're terrible.
Determined
too.
To take over the world.
Rule
determined
the world.
To rule the world. Please consider writing us a review or leaving a star rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. We just looked at the numbers. Half of you do Apple Podcasts. About 15% of you do Spotify. The rest of you do a bunch of other places. So if you are one of those people who are listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please check us out in the ratings. I don't know what that means. I'm so tired and hungry. My words have stopped making sense.
Did you say check us out in the ratings?
Yeah, that's my words have stopped making sense. I can smell the food. I can't smell
the
food.
You got slapped with a palooka hand. That's what happened to you.
I got palooka'd. Damn you, Chris.
You got hit in the beef with a palooka.
If he hit you in the beef with a palooka, it'd be all over.
Do you remember what like he hit him in the beef was from?
Yeah, Flintstones.
Flintstones, yeah.
Yeah, good stuff. Hey, thanks for listening. That was fun. Next week,
fun.
Will there be more G.I. Joe talk? Well, there will be, but will it be on this show? We'll find out.
I'm guessing
find
there
out
will
next
be.
Week.
I mean, really, the question is how long will this last?
That's true. We're on a high, but the highs never last forever.
No, but.
Was Cobra Law the first indication of the high weaning? We'll find out.
You know what the most disappointing toy was ever?
Uh-oh.
Nemesis Enforcer. Because he, like Cobra Law or not, he looked cool as shit in that movie. And he had those big, scary wings. And the toy had those crappy, snap-on, tiny, like comedically small bat wings. And he had in the cartoon, he had those big, like, blades that came out of his elbows. But they were just little nubs on the toy.
It's all bad. It was like they were all, Marvel like, Universe.
The problem with the toys is that they were all the same height, so nobody got to be bigger than anybody else. Like, Tunnel Rat should have been smaller.
That's, you're right, because it was cheaply, yes, you're right. No,
I mean, we know why.
All right, we have to go now. My name is Connor. I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You know, Stalker has been on sale for like $20, like $12, but he doesn't come with a jetpack, so that's why I haven't gotten him.
Does he have a beret?
Yeah, of course he has a beret.
Well, then get Stalker. What are you doing?
You know what Stalker's first name is?
I did. Now I don't.
It's Alonzo.
Alonzo, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Bye, everyone.
Oh, boy. Get up and get down. Late 911, where's the late crime?
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way. malware, why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.